this afternoon to start with. What I want to do is to as was mentioned, to look now how. So this morning we really worked on defining, trying to be mindful of the feeling tone, Vedana. So understanding what are we talking about, can we be aware of them, the different aspect of that. But this afternoon, what I want to look a little bit at is, okay, we are mindful of the feeling tone, and the Buddha, in a way, wanted us also to be mindful of what is our relationship, what happens with the feeling tone, and how mindfulness could help us there. So it's kind of here we're kind of more looking at what's our relationship, what happened, because the Buddha had some very, in a way, specific idea about it. So I'll read, first I'll work on one quote, and then I'll work on another quote from the ancient early text. So the first one, depending on eyes and visible focus, visual consciousness arises, the meeting of the three is contact. So this is in a way the Buddhist definition of contact and the way the kind of the senses with the consciousness, with the senses work, how it's seen to work. With contact as condition, there arises pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral feeling tone. One can make an end to suffering by abandoning the underlying tendency to grasp at pleasant feeling tone, to resist unpleasant feeling tone, and to ignore neutral feeling tone. So here he's pointing out that actually when we have a certain underlying tendencies, that if we experience a pleasant feeling tone, there is kind of like, no, there is a free place here. So he's kind of saying that we, in relationship with the feeling tones, we have certain relatively automatic underlying tendencies. So with the pleasant feeling tone, if we experience a pleasant feeling tone, generally we want to repeat them. We want them to continue. And so this is kind of interesting to look at that. So often, I mean, one interesting example of this, repeating, wanting to repeat something which was pleasant, is, let's say, you have a day of meditation, and it gives rise to very pleasant feeling tone. And then you think, as soon as you leave, you think, I'll do this again. And then you have another day of meditation, and it's not guaranteed that you will experience exactly the same thing. But to see, I mean, one way to see it, I think is wonderful, is with food. You know, if you have a kind of, you see something which looks nice. So you see something, looks nice. So you serve yourself, and if it looks nice, you take a little more. If it doesn't look nice, you take a little less. Then you have it in your plate, and then you put it in your mouth. And you think, And what is interesting is as soon, a lot of the time when we have this, this is nice, nearly immediately, I want more. So you've not even finished what you have on your plate, but you're already planning to get more. Or you eat it and you finish it. This is what is also interesting. You eat the food, you appreciate it, you have a pleasant feeling toward, and then you stop eating it. And then you have like the, that was nice. Let's take a little more. So it's kind of very interesting that actually a lot of this is with sometimes I would say, not necessarily, but sometimes overeating is really on that feeling toward principle. I mean, there are other things with it, of course. But just, it's very interesting that moment where, and it's kind of like, it's very automatic. It's very automatic. I think, personally, I think the feeling toward is kind of nearly like kind of evolutionary. In terms of if it's good for you, take it, maybe stock it. I mean, in the ancient prehistoric time, stock it. Eat it lots, you know. Or if it's unpleasant, then you really want to avoid it because it's dangerous and things of that nature. I presume that's the way they found out, you know, you should not eat this, you should eat that. I mean, very much with the kind of the feeling tone. So I think this underlying tendency in a way are not bad per se, but I think it's kind of what they lead to. I think it's kind of what kind of we can look at. This kind of like repetition, or we want it to continue. And then if you cannot repeat it, or if you cannot continue, then of course it can lead to the opposite. As the nun was saying, when the unpleasant is finished, then when the pleasant is finished, it can become unpleasant. So sometimes there is kind of something to look at there. So, but let's look at kind of repetition. This is something that I'm quite fascinated by. So recently I had this experience, which was wonderful because it confirmed my theory about feeling toad. So I was in Austria. I was going to teach, and before we went to the center, we stayed with a friend, and we had to eat at lunchtime. So we go to a restaurant, and the only thing I can eat is a plate of mushrooms, but not any mushroom. It's chanterelle, little kind of, you know, orange little trumpet mushroom. Very delicious. So I have this plate of chanterelle, which I have not eaten in a long time, and also as good as that. So I enjoy every single one, but really, yes, you know, like it was pleasant. 8.5 or more, you know, each, you know, and I see the last one, you know, I eat the last one, I really enjoy the last one. And then I finish the plate, everything is impermanent, and then I leave the restaurant, and then I check the memory. And what was interesting is a memory of that, of the feeling torn, I would say it was still pleasant number 7.5, let's say. It was like, wow, that plate of chanterelle, phew, that was nice, you know. So there was quite this very pleasant contact, even with the memory. So then to test my theory, the next day, same time, same plate of chanterelle. And so I have again my plate of chanterelle, and I eat it. And it's okay, but it's not amazing. And it's, I would say, 5.5. So I eat it, And then when I leave the restaurant, I check the memory. And actually the memory of the day before had gone down before because of that experience. So now the memory had gone down to 3. And so, to me, this is what is kind of interesting, that there are different kinds of repetition. You have what I would call ordinary repetition, but sometimes we want to repeat something which is new. And in a way, you cannot repeat the newness. I mean, you can repeat the contact with the thing, but you cannot have a new contact with the same thing. And often I think what we kind of actually, the feeling tone comes more from the newness than from the object itself. And then, of course, as you said, in comparison to me not having had it for a long time, but then having it a day after, then no contrast. You could nearly say negative contrast. So that is an interesting thing to look at in terms of, in a way, I would say, our expectation in terms of the feeling tone. Having the same feeling tone with the same contact is not assured. Then there is another thing to look at in terms of the pleasant feeling tone, is sometimes is in a way what I would call grasping at an imaginary pleasant feeling tone. And we have a little tendency to do that. If only I had this, and then you kind of imagine something which is fantastic, much better than what's going on now. And so in a way, it gives you a little boost, in a way, because you are imagining something pleasant. Then you have a little pleasant feeling tone from it. But often, because we have a tendency to compare, then we compare this, great, to that. And then the problem there is that in comparison to the imaginary pleasant feeling tone, then the kind of, you know, maybe too pleasant or neutral goes down because of the contrast. And so we have to be a little careful. I'm not saying we cannot aspire to something, but seeing a little difference between expectation, where we kind of then imagine something quite specific, and then often we compare it to what is going now, to aspiration, which in a way kind of give us energy to move forward. If we aspire to wisdom and compassion, for example, it gives you energy to move toward that. But if you think, right now, I must be 100% compassionate, and I'm not, then there kind of is a little kind of frustration, or there can be a little judgment. So in a way, kind of that, I think, is an interesting one. One also to consider, sometimes I think it's funny, in terms of the meditation, I hope you don't do this, but possibly sometimes people do it, is you sit in meditation, and often we have a certain imaginary idea of what it should be, or we have had previous experience which were pleasant. So we sit in meditation, and we might feel sleepy, we might have lots of thought, we might have aches and pain, whatever it might be. And so because of that, there could be a little unpleasant feeling too. And then you imagine what I would call the previous meditator or the perfect meditator. And then the perfect meditator has no thought, no aches, no pain, and is floating a little bit too above the cushion. And then, I mean, that's very pleasant. But then if you compare it to this meditator who has aches, pain, thought, a little sleepiness, then it's not that good. But that one does not exist. So I think we have to be a little careful, because in one way, of course, part of our humanity is to imagine, is to aspire. So that actually it gives us, I think, one of the functions. It activates us, but also it gives us pleasant feeling tone. I think that's one of its function, actually. But to be careful of the difference between aspiration, which moves us in a certain direction, and expectation, which generally leads to comparison, and then often leads to unpleasant feeling tone. And so, what to do with pleasant feeling tone? Personally, I would say, enjoy them while they last, because they're not going to last. And to me, that's why I think the meditation could help us there to be more aware of the pleasant feeling tone in a non-grasping way, but in a more mindful, meaning that we're really aware of them, the whole range, and not just when they're fantastically high, but also the little one, so that we see, oh yeah, at times I can experience pleasant feeling tone. And to me, this is an important part of actually the function of mudita, appreciated joy, that we did, I think, last time, or I did it somewhere else. Can't remember totally. And to me, there is a connection between actually pleasant feeling tone, mindfulness of that, and this cultivation of appreciation, and also altruistic joy, rejoicing with others. I see it really as kind of part of a continuum. Then you have the unpleasant feeling tone. Unpleasant? As the Buddha said, ooh, we don't want it. So generally we push it away, we reject it, or this is an interesting thing, it does not exist. Like it does not happen. Sometimes we kind of nearly negate it. It's like when we're children and we kind of break something. And then, you know, the parents might say, oh, you broke this. And you say, no, I did not do anything. I mean, the thing is there. But it's like, no, this did not happen. So in a way, we can kind of like push it away. We can negate it. Or we can grasp at it negatively, which is the next thing I'll talk after that. But the unpleasant feeling tone, it's interesting. Because, of course, I mean, I think it's a total normal reaction not to want it, to want it to go fast. I mean, I agree, it's not unpleasant feeling tone is unpleasant. I mean, you know, it's a fairly survival mechanism. No, I don't want this. And at the same time, I think that's what kind of like the Buddha is suggesting, is that life happens. It's not like all life is suffering, but suffering happens in life. This is part of the human condition, that unpleasant feeling tone arises. And then the question is, since it's something that is going to happen at some point due to various conditions, can we creatively engage with unpleasant feeling tone? So that, in a way, there is not this immediate pushing away, negated, and instead, to me, it's very much of understanding. I think about the mindfulness of the unpleasant feeling tone is really understanding that they arise upon certain conditions. So it's really understanding conditionality. To understand that there is generally some condition, there is some trigger, there is some conditioning factor, contributing factor, that in a way, we don't have unpleasant feeling tone all the time. But time to time, they arise. They might arrive because, you could say, you know, if you burnt yourself, well, this is kind of like, I would say, plain science. If you fall, this is kind of, again, plain science, you fall, unless you're kind of really mindless, then the mind comes in. So there is something which are plain physical. And then you have other things which could be emotional, which could be mental, which could be conditional. You know, sometimes things happen. I mean, you have nothing to do with it. But a terrible thing can happen to you, totally out of you doing anything. So when these things happen, in a way, how can we creatively engage with them? I think that's what kind of really the Buddha is talking about. Can we understand the conditions? Can we also, with the unpleasant feeling tone, explore how they arise and pass away? And then what is interesting is then the intensity of them and the length. And also how they change within themselves. To me, this is what is very interesting with feeling tone. How long do they last? How do they change? That's part of the practice as well. Not just observing the thing itself, but also observing how it changes. Then with the unpleasant feeling tone, there is also the imaginary unpleasant feeling tone. And I think sometimes, partly due to fear or different things, we are fine. We are fine, the neutral, pleasant. But we start to imagine, what if this happened? What if that happened? And actually, you create, upon the contact with that thought, fearful thought, unpleasant feeling tone arise, which actually can cover all the pleasant and neutral feeling tone of the now. And so that's an interesting one to look at. I'm feeling an unpleasant feeling tone. Is it about something that is actually existing, that I'm in contact, which is kind of like here? Or is it something which is imaginary? Either which is in advance, or, and that one has existed, but it doesn't exist anymore, in the past. This is an interesting one. If you kind of sit in meditation and you remember something unpleasant that happened to you. So in a way, you have a memory which is give an unpleasant feeling tone. What do you do with that? Because if this is part of your history, these things will come up for whatever reason, different condition. But do we kind of like, in a way, identify with it? And either go, if only it has not happened, but it has happened. Or if only I could have done differently, but generally the way we did then was possibly the only way we could see it then. And so this is an interesting one in terms of the past, the unpleasant feeling tone associated with the past. And I think that's partly in a way, which is of course much more intense. If you have PTSD, it's like kind of, you know, post-traumatic stress, because you have had in the past really, really kind of intense, unpleasant feeling tone. Then it's not, I feel it's not just in the mind, it's in the whole body-mind complex that there is this very big association. And that is kind of, again, tricky, but that's what I want to talk about now. So I want to read another quote. It's here. So again, from the early text, when contacted by a painful feeling, he or she sorrows, grieves, laments. He or she weeps, beating his or her breast, and becomes distraught. He or she feels two feelings, a bodily one and a mental one. So here, is talking about what I call the amplifying effect. That in a way, you have our automatic reaction. Pleasant, I want more. Unpleasant, I don't want it. Neutral, will finish with it. But now it's more like there is, you have the feeling tone. And then it's a bit of a choice. I mean, over time, a choice. Do I grasp at the feeling tone, or do I creatively engage with the feeling tone? Because if we grasp at the feeling tone, we generally are going to amplify it and to exaggerate it. And so I think that's where the mindfulness of the feeling tone comes in terms of our relationship, is I experience a feeling tone. If I grasp at it, generally, I am going to identify with it, I'm going to solidify it, and then I'm going to amplify it. And so I'm not just having the unpleasant feeling tone. I'm having, in a way, also the exaggerated unpleasant feeling tone. And that's what the Buddha called the second arrow. The first arrow is when you have the painful contact, and the second arrow is when, in a way, you grasp at it, which then has this amplification effect. And the amplification effect can work in different ways. And so it can work in the grasping effect, what I call the grasping effect, which to me, grasping means we identify, I, me, mine. In meditation, it's interesting when you do the meditation, especially if you sit on the floor, and then, you know, at some point you get some pain in the knee. And very interesting, when you say, my knee, my pain, suddenly it's kind of like it becomes bigger. If actually you go inside the sensation and try to see how it works, what happens within the knee, then you still have some discomfort, but there is no amplification with it. This is an interesting thing to look at, how when we grasp, we identify together, and then generally you have this slight amplification effect. But if you kind of mindfully go inside it, then you are just with the thing as it happens, as it arises, so to speak. And that's an interesting one to kind of work with in terms of the unpleasant one. Then we have also what I call the generalizing tendency. This, I think, is just, I think it's again an evolution, survival mechanism that we need to generalize, you know, that we know that, yes, you know, we can use this for that in general, and we can do that in general. I mean, this, I think, is part of the human condition, what makes meaning, what helps us to survive day to day. But then if that generalizing principle, which is kind of quite helpful, if we kind of, it becomes nearly what I call permanentizing. So then you have an unpleasant feeling toward, it's always like this. So from one instances of one contact, that's what is kind of the mindfulness of contact is interesting. You see, you have a contact which is unpleasant. And from that contact which is unpleasant, then very quickly you go into, it's always like this, or it's going to last a long time. Like, you know, for example, if it starts to rain, you might think, it's going to rain for the whole week or whatever it is. It's kind of like we have this kind of tendency to make things longer than they are. And so that's why where you have the impermanent principle with the feeling tone, to notice that when something happens, of course I can kind of, you know, want to generalize. But to be careful there. Personally, my little mantra for this is, let's see what happens. It could be the same, it could be different. So I try not to kind of overgeneralize, so to speak, to be a little careful with that tendency. And then you can be more with the things itself than what I would call an abstract idea. Because then there is what I call association. And this is something we seem, I don't know why, possibly again evolution, survival mechanism, we seem to have a much stronger associative tendency with unpleasant feeling tone than with pleasant feeling tone. We have a pleasant feeling tone, we don't think it's always like this. We don't go into, oh, my life is always fantastic. I don't know why, but we don't do this, it seems. So what I think happens, very likely because of a certain mechanism, is when there is an unpleasant feeling tone, because it has the same taste, the same something of the past unpleasant feeling tone, then it quickly gets associated with it. So instead of staying with, I had this contact, that was unpleasant, and in a way creatively engaging with that, very quickly we associate with past unpleasant feeling tone. And then, of course, it again has what the Buddha called this second arrow, this kind of, in a way, amplifying principle. And that's something to kind of, in a way, look at a little bit in terms of the unpleasant feeling tone. What happens? And then I like to finish with the neutral. So why I'm so keen in the neutral. And the Buddha says the neutral is a little confusing because it's a little indeterminate, kind of not much is going on. And personally, I would say because of the Romantics. Personally, I think it's a fault of the Romantics. I mean, I read a book about that, you know, kind of the Romantic, kind of against boredom. Something has to happen. Even if it's bad, intensely bad, it's better if it's neutral. So I think because possibly of the Romantics and different other things, we have often actually an unpleasant association with neutral. We're kind of like neutral, nothing is happening. Nothing is happening in my life. This is boring, etc., etc. But neutral, what does it mean? Personally, I wonder if neutral is not connected in some way to what a state, seemingly it's called, but I could remember wrongly, homeostasis. The fact that, in a way, our body and mind complex cannot be at pitch level all the time. And personally, I wonder if neutral is not the baseline. So that we have this baseline, which is relatively neutral, relatively restful for the system. Then we go up, then we go down. Doesn't mean we have to stay at neutral. We go up, we go down, but we can come back to this neutral baseline. And I think sometimes we have like an imaginary baseline. And often the kind of like what I would call the assumed imaginary baseline is pleasant number 5. So if I feel pleasant number 5, I don't really notice it. If it goes to 10, oh, yeah. Great, this is fine. But then if your baseline means number 5 pleasant, you have lots to go down. You have 15 to go down. But you can have the opposite baseline. You could have the baseline at minus 5. And I think that's what often happened with depression, depressed state. That actually, you often, you know, underneath minus 5, and just to go back to that is rather difficult and really painful to have that kind of baseline. And to me, it seemed that the mindfulness is a little to kind of nearly establish in some way that neutral baseline, but then we go up, we go down, but then we come back. And that's where personally I would connect it, of course, with equanimity, the beginning of equanimity. So I'm not saying it's equanimity, but that it kind of has a little taste of it in terms of being restful. Kind of it's kind of the mind can rest, the body can rest, but of course, you don't want to stay there all the time. Again, we don't need to generalize permanent tithe and neutral as better than the other two. But it could be a natural place. And to me, that's why I wonder, and that's for us, all of us, to explore how if you stay with the same contact, it seems to me, and if the contact lasts in time, like if it's short, then the feeling tone, I think, is kind of more kind of pronounced. But I think if you stay with the contact, it seems to me it kind of comes back a little to neutral. But this is for you to find out. Again, is my theory correct or not? This is my impression, you know, and if you can check if yes or no. I think that's part of the practice, is to explore. So that's why personally I think neutral is interesting at that level in terms of the baseline, in terms of kind of, you know, moving through different feeling tones. So that's what I wanted to talk about this afternoon. And so for the practice this afternoon, for the first sitting, I am going to do a guided meditation, because after lunch, often we're a little sleepy. So I'll do a little kind of guided meditation to keep us awake. So guided meditation of the body, because that's a big contact, you know, the body, the feeling tone upon sensation and contact. So that's what we're going to observe. The sensation and then the feeling tone upon that contact. Then we'll have the walking meditation. And then the last sitting, we'll look at the mental state. If we can notice the feeling tone upon contact with thought. So first, if you will stand up and just stretch a little.